Hi, everybody, and welcome to Two Off the First. It is June the 9th, 2023. I'm Ryan Balogie. It's good to have you with us. We have just 82 days until we take off to Ireland with Club Choice Ireland. Check them out at clubchoiceireland.com. If you're interested in traveling to Ireland or Northern Ireland on a golf getaway, they're absolutely fantastic. We are also presented by our friends at Swanee's Golf, and we will tell you about them a little bit later on in the show. But if you're watching, I'm wearing a great Swanee's hoodie today, getting ready to go to the beach for a week with my family after a long school year and what feels like an eternity of a week. But we'll tell you a little bit more about them later on the show. But check them out at swanees.co, that's swanees.co. Okay, with today's show, I don't want to necessarily kind of have a traditional two off the first of two topics. I kind of want to get into what this is and what this isn't between the PGA Tour, the DP World Tour, the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia, LIV Golf, all of that stuff. And then try to kind of piecemeal it all together. And for at least a few minutes, putting aside the issues that we have with Saudi Arabia, the issues that we have with their investment in golf, their reputation, all that stuff, to put that aside, but not to forget it, but to try to explain, at least in somewhat better terms, what this seems to be and what this doesn't seem to be. Because PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan apparently did an awful job of explaining to his players and constituents what this deal is and what it might mean for the PGA Tour. It seems that way to me, at least. And it also seems that Greg Norman is doing a terrible job of explaining to his people at LIV what this is and what this isn't for the future of LIV Golf. And I didn't get a good explanation from Rory McIlroy because I don't think he really knows. He's not a businessman, after all. So you have Jimmy Dunn, who finally speaks about this. Now, Jimmy Dunn is the guy who effectively, along with Ed Herlihy, who is one of the top M&A lawyers in the world, if you know, at least at a minimum the country, they negotiated this deal, or at least they helped architect it. And apparently it happened over the course of 7 or 8 weeks from the period of just after the Masters to whenever this was agreed to in the last week, I don't know, last few days, whatever it is. And it started because Jimmy Dunn apparently said to Jay Monahan that he felt it was important to understand the adversary and that he wanted to reach out directly. And this comes cobbled together from multiple different interviews that Jimmy Dunn did yesterday. Did some for Golf Channel. He did one for Sports Illustrated. Did one with USA Today. Did with a number of entities to try to explain what's going on. And you have in that arrangement, right, that Jimmy Dunn communication, which apparently happened over like WhatsApp, which is an encrypted app. And Jimmy Dunn reached out to Yasser Al-Rumayyan, who is the governor of the Public Investment Fund, basically introduced himself and said he wanted to talk. They talked, had some conversations. Ultimately, that led to conversations and rounds of golf with Jay Monahan. Jay Monahan said he trusted Yasser Al-Rumayyan within 10 minutes of meeting him, which I don't even think I trusted my wife within 10 minutes of meeting her, so that's a very strange thing to say. But Jimmy Dunn, in some of his appearances, and particularly the one in Sports Illustrated, kind of outlined the context of what this deal is, at least in his view, and what it isn't. And kind of trying to read the tea leaves a little bit, read through his spin and what it might actually mean. I think the takeaway here is this isn't a merger, but it is. So it's not going to be labeled one, but it sounds like the commercial interests of the PGA Tour, the Public Investment Fund, which is LIV, and the DP World Tour will come together in a for-profit company. So the way Jimmy Dunn is describing it in this article with Michael Rosenberg, who did a very nice job, by the way, explaining everything here with just kind of bullet point by bullet point, very easy to consume, Jimmy Dunn's kind of explanation of the parameters of this deal, which I appreciate that, as most people still probably aren't going to get this at the end of the day. But here are some of the key takeaways. So Dunn says the PGA Tour is still going to be the PGA Tour and called the PGA Tour. He also says that Jay Monahan will be the commissioner of LIV Golf, effectively killing off the role for Greg Norman, that he's going to run that and that the PGA Tour will still remain in some kind of partnership with the DP World Tour. Now, of course, this is the terms of the settlement, right? And you have to think about what the agreement announced is the settlement. It's the LOI, the letter of intent, the coming together, the peace brokering, whatever that is, whatever you want to call that. That's what this is. All the details get finalized later, and maybe some have already been worked out. Maybe some are on paper. We don't know that piece of that, right? I mean, we didn't even know this thing was coming, so we don't know how far along these people are in negotiating the actual terms of things. But let's continue to kind of go down through Dunn's explanation of everything. He says, with Monahan in charge of this entity, he could disband LIV. He could make it go away if he wants. And that if LIV golfers then want to play on the PGA Tour with LIV disbanded, Monahan and the current PGA Tour leaders, board, whatever, would have to approve those terms. So the way Jimmy Dunn is trying to describe it is that ultimately Jay Monahan has installed himself as the commissioner of golf, not just the PGA Tour, all of golf. That's the way it sounds, right? So if that's the case, and he can disband LIV, then he effectively is going to kill off LIV or absorb it in some fashion, and then he can apply the penalties to players as he would like. Who knows how true that is in the end, what that will actually look like when it's finalized, but that's how Jimmy Dunn is describing it. He also says that the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia is not contributing anything directly to the PGA Tour or its players, but rather, or anything currently to the deal, but that they will get, as described in this release announcing the deal earlier in the week, what's called the right of first refusal on any kind of investment in the future. So that in this new organization, the Public Investment Fund has an equity stake, a minority equity stake. They have the chairman's seat on the board with Al Ramayan. They have Monahan as the CEO, Hurley, he and Dunn as part of the board, you would assume. And then you figure out the rest of the board, and that the PGA Tour controls the majority of the seats, at least for now. But that the Saudis have apparently not committed any money up front, and that will maybe get worked out in the final details. That's like a technically true as of now thing. But that the key here is really the right of first refusal. And I think Dunn downplays the value of this in his explanation, or at least so it seems based on Rosenberg's writing of it. But the right of first refusal is very important. It's not minuscule. The right of first refusal means when an investment opportunity comes along, maybe the DP World Tour comes out, maybe the PGA Tour comes out, comes to this group and says, hey, we want to invest $1 billion in X, Y, and Z. They have to go to the Public Investment Fund first, and they get to decide whether they want to do the deal or they don't want to do the deal. That doesn't mean they can't do the deal without the Public Investment Fund. It just means they get the first crack at choosing it. That doesn't mean that they can deny it or not have it done at all. It just means they kind of get to decide whether they want to be involved in the first place. Now, as the board makeup could change over time, that could mean the Saudis would have not only the right of first refusal, but the right of refusal, period. But at least at the outset, and of course this can all change over time, businesses change over time, the PGA Tour is setting itself up to have the opportunity to bring these things forward and can finance them if they need, but the Public Investment Fund has the first crack at it. The example, however, that Jimmy, or at least Michael Rosenberg gave, I don't know if Jimmy Dunn gave this example, but Michael Rosenberg did, and maybe he's just trying to explain to people what right of first refusal actually means, but what it means is that, at least in Michael Rosenberg's explanation, say the tour wants to go buy Pebble Beach Golf Links from the Pebble Beach Company, then the Public Investment Fund would have the first right to be the partner on that deal or the lead financer of that deal. And that the tour would be the controlling partner because they have the majority stake, or at least the plurality stake, of equity in this for-profit company. That's what Dunn's explanation is. As I added, he said that the Public Investment Fund has not committed any money in investments at this point, although he anticipates it will be in the billions, Jimmy Dunn does. So I think you're kind of like, oh, well, they haven't put any money in yet. Well, that's as of true right now, right? That's going to change. They're not just going to have the right of first refusal and then never invest anything. So Saudi money's coming. How that's used and what it's used for, maybe that's TBD, but that is coming. So that, do not confuse that at all, even though Jimmy Dunn's saying, hey, they haven't committed anything yet. He knows they're going to commit something. You don't agree to invest and have the right of first refusal if you have no intention of ever using it. That's a simple business understanding. And that the Saudis apparently have no guarantee in this, at least in this framework that they've agreed to, no guarantee of tournament site sponsorships or anything else like that. But at some point, they could choose to offer to invest enormous sums of money in the PGA Tour and in sponsorship, and that could come with strings attached. And we shall see what happens there. But then the key last kind of point of all this is all legal disputes have been settled. Now, that said, the case of Matt Jones and the 10 other players and those guys withdrew, now being LIV Golf versus the PGA Tour, I looked at the court system today. It's not done yet. It's not gone. In fact, actually, earlier in the week, to start the week, there were filings made by the PGA Tour's lawyers requesting that documents were filed under seal regarding the PGA Tour's seemingly encrypted communications with non-parties to the lawsuit. Now, that could be absolutely fascinating if that were denied. It won't be. But that could mean discussions about what's had happened in this discussion. That could mean things that were conversations with McIlroy, with other people, with sponsors, with players. It could cover a whole variety of activities. But that lawsuit is not officially closed yet. And that could be dependent upon something. I don't know. It could be just an administrative thing. You know, they kind of have a big thing going on today. Well, next week, with the arraignment of former President Donald Trump. So maybe that's all muddied up. I don't know. But the lawsuit is not gone yet. It's just that, hey, we're going to end it, and we've agreed to end it with this document, which, by the way, is binding. Whatever has been signed is binding. You can't just get out of that. As someone pointed out to me on Twitter, and I will tell you from personal experience, when you sign a letter of intent, that is effectively what this is. It's binding. Elon Musk learned that when he tried to weasel out of the letter of intent that he signed to buy Twitter. And now he's bought Twitter and all the issues that come out with that. So Dunn is trying to push back and say that the Public Investment Fund did not buy the PGA Tour. And in a way, Jimmy Dunn is right. They apparently have not, if the terms, hell, this is outlined, are accurate. They didn't buy anything yet. Yet. But they could over time. Because if they have the right of first refusal and they want something, then they're going to get it. Because you're not going to have an acrimonious board where you have constant 5-4 votes. That ain't going to be the way this works. So if the Saudis want a part of the pie and they want it to get bigger and they want part of that, they're going to make it bigger. They're going to take their opportunity to invest. They're going to put their money to work. And that means, yes, they didn't buy the PGA Tour, but they've bought the influence of the PGA Tour and its direction because of their position on the board as chair, because of their right of first refusal in this venture. That's as simple as that. So I think what Dunn's saying and trying to kind of spin that piece of it is inaccurate at best, technically true at best, maybe inaccurate at worst. I don't know. I don't think it's an out-and-out lie because it's technically true. But what he's saying could morph over time to be proven wrong. And it was interesting for him to give this piece of it. I mean, he kind of talked about the potential antitrust piece of this. And I do think that there is severe scrutiny here that is going to happen. Again, I don't know what that amounts to in the end. I talked about this on my weekly show, the 19th Hole Golf Show, about one of the things that could derail this deal. And there are a lot of things that could. But one of the things that could derail this deal is the Department of Justice and the Federal Trade Commission. And they could say, well, we think this is effectively, we don't care what you call it. We call it a merger to monopoly. It doesn't matter what you say it is. Here's what it is. And that could absolutely be the case. But that remains to be seen. And I think Jimmy Dunn has more or less acknowledged that. But the way Dunn is kind of describing this deal, I think you want to put it a little bit differently than maybe some of the other explanations you have heard. I still think that they have effectively bought golf because they have bought the right of first refusal and an equity stake in whatever this combined thing is. That's a huge deal, and please do not underestimate that. And I feel like Dunn is kind of downplaying it, maybe for a variety of reasons, but the guy's been on the board of the PGA Tour since November, so he's done a whole lot of transformation of the PGA Tour in 8 months. That all said, it seems like this is effectively an LOI. And you may think that's a little bit different than it is, but the LOI then leads to what the actual final terms of the agreement are, and that could be where the rubber really meets the road. But at least what you have right now is a sketch of a ceasefire, effectively. And then moving forward, what all that looks like, we shall see. We don't know. But then you have on the other side of things, Greg Norman, apparently through Alan Shipnuck at Fire Pit Collective, who has been effectively embedded in LIV for about a year, covering every event because he wanted to write a book about it. And so he's got sources at LIV. He's getting fed the LIV side of things. I don't know if he's been locked out of the PGA Tour side of things, but he's got the LIV side of things. And apparently Greg Norman got on a call and told his people at LIV things are as they were, that LIV's going to continue as a separate entity, that they should keep trying to sell sponsorships and partnerships, and that so many people have called because of the agreement with the PGA Tour and the public investment fund, and that all of a sudden people are interested in sponsorships and team ownership and all of that stuff. And I find it interesting that Alan is reporting that, not quite as fact, but reporting that at all without the kind of cynicism and skepticism that is probably necessary about that. Because if we know anything about LIV this entire way, is that they've kind of been BSing it, right? I mean, they have not lied, but they have oversold themselves at every opportunity and hoped someone would buy it. And there doesn't seem to be any truth to anything here. If one of these two guys is wrong, Greg Norman's wrong or Jimmy Dunn's wrong. You take your pick who you think's wrong, the guy who negotiated the deal, Jimmy Dunn, or at least was in the room for a lot of it, or the guy who found out about it on Tuesday morning, just before a CNBC interview, like everybody else, Greg Norman. You tell me who you want to believe. So I really don't know the outcome, of course, but it strikes me that the reason LIV is continuing and has been told to continue is the possibility that this deal doesn't get done, right? And so there's still going to be a 2023 season for LIV. There may be a 2024 season for LIV. Whatever the final agreement is may not come to fruition until sometime in 2024, maybe 2025. Depends on legal scrutiny, depends on who could derail the deal, other factors between the negotiating parties that could derail the deal. There are a lot of things at work here that could change the course of things and prohibit it from happening either at all or for quite a while. We shall see. But I get the sense that LIV Golf was probably told to continue operating as normal, given that it could happen, that the deal might not work out in the end, for whatever reason, outside forces, inside forces. And so that's what Greg Norman communicated to his people, basically Leo DiCaprio and the Wolf of Wall Street. I'm not effing leaving. That's kind of his piece of this. And so from there, I think LIV's going to, they're going to finish out 2023 because the Saudis already committed to that. That's what they agreed to. But they could then pull the plug and they go, oh, well, this agreement with the tour allows us to pull the plug and we don't have to pay any of you anything anymore because we agreed to another business arrangement with the tour and the tour killed LIV. So the Saudis can get out of LIV, right? They've already spent billions, but they can get out of LIV. And they could just point the finger at the tour and go, well, it's Jay's fault. You have to deal with him now. We're sorry. We're out. And that gives them a convenient out. And LIV then just operates into its natural, seemingly, conclusion. Or Jay Monahan could absolutely reverse course and go, you know what? LIV's actually worth something. We want LIV to exist and we want it to continue. And we've agreed with the public investment fund that it's going to continue. Who knows? But I think that it's really a technicality that LIV continues. And I have a feeling that Shipnuck's reporting, at least the way he presented it, is not an accurate representation of why LIV is still thinking that everything works out great and lovely. And so I think that's very curious. So you've got all of that together. And where this goes from here, I don't think is immediately clear, but I did want to point out that many of the principals involved here have done a very poor job of representing themselves or communicating to their constituents. And I want to get to that for a few minutes. But first, I would like to tell you just briefly about our friends at Swanee's. See what I'm wearing if you're watching the show. I love these hoodies and I love the polos I've been wearing. Take them out everywhere. Get great compliments about them. And Swanee's is a fresh take on golf apparel. They have performance-based materials and they are really the stretchiest, best feeling, lightweight stuff in the market. And they make great stuff that makes you feel good. And I really like Swanee's because they have the point of view that really any kind of golf is an opportunity to celebrate, right? Being able to be out on the golf course and have fun and have a fun attitude, whether it's bogeys, pars, birdies, eagles, whatever it is, but it is cause to celebrate. And that means looking really great on the golf course doesn't have to cost you a ton of money, and that they can provide looks that allow you to go from the course back to life or life to the course, any kind of situation, you're going to look great, you're going to feel good. And that's really the key here with the Swanee's. They do a great job with everything. I would highly encourage you to check them out at swanees.co, swanees.co. They have some great Father's Day bundles from $50. So if you're looking for a gift for a dad or a dad in your life or golf dad or whatever at the last minute, Swanee's has got you covered. That's swanees.co. Now, the last thing I want to tell you about is, and this is an opinion part of this, right? I mean, a lot of this is analysis, but this is an opinion piece of this. Jimmy Dunn did a lot of media yesterday, at least relatively for him, right? And he went on Golf Channel, and I think he is, and we've tried to put this aside for the first 20 minutes of this show, explaining what the deal is and isn't without including the ethical or morality component of this. But Jimmy Dunn, who lost 66 employees from his firm on September 11th in the Twin Towers, he seemed to kind of compartmentalize the value of this deal, effectively saying, I've gotten past 9/11, and that I only blame the people who crashed the planes into the buildings and not the Saudi government, which purportedly financed the deal or provided money to the terrorists who took out these targets and killed thousands of Americans and other people. And I really struggle with that. I have a lot of problems with that. And his explanation for it given on Golf Channel was quite strange in that he said, you know, I don't think that they're conspirators, the people that we've been dealing with are, and that if they're one of them, I'll kill them on the spot kind of thing. I mean, it was very, very strange to try to go from, well, I've worked past it as a victim of 9/11 and having known so many every day for the 22 years since, but that, you know, I ratchet it up to, but if they're in the room, I'm going to get them. I didn't like that. I don't get that. I mean, I get how someone can get there, I suppose, but I'm not there. And it was very similar in a talking point that Bryson DeChambeau gave in that unhinged last minute of an interview on CNN with Caitlin Collins, where it seemed like for the first couple of minutes was just kind of Bryson giving his usual word salad, trying to seem smart and take a victory lap, to going from, well, you know, it's been 20 years, we should just get over 9/11 and everything's fine. And also then you've got Jay Monahan, who did the interview on Golf Channel and was asked by George Savarikas, because I think he did a nice job with the interview, and asked him basically to respond to the 9/11 families who called him now a paid shill for the Saudis. And all he could really muster as a reason was, I have to own that, and I'm sorry I didn't communicate it better. As though if he had sent them a text message a week before him, it was like, I'm going to do a deal with the Saudis. You guys cool with that? Just want to let you know. Like, that would have been totally fine. Like, that was the problem, not the principle of working with a sovereign wealth fund of a government that helped finance a terrorist attack on this country. Multiple ones, by the way. So golf's representatives have not looked particularly good at a variety of times in the last few days. And even if all of this stuff is just kind of a compartmentalized deal, at the end of the day, that is still a very large, looming piece of all of this that I think people have to deal with. And you may be totally fine with it, that you may have been totally fine with the financing of LIV or whatever this is going to be moving forward. And that's completely your choice. But the explanations given are frankly unacceptable and pretty embarrassing. And I don't know if there's a good answer to it, like quote unquote good answer, not, you know, short of satisfactory to me answer, but I mean a good answer that you would just go, oh, I kind of get it. I don't know that. And I don't know what the fallout of this is all going to be, even if it turns out that it's just this kind of siloed opportunity to invest in golf with the PGA Tour, kind of directing the investments, effectively being the broker instead of the Saudis day trading through LIV. I don't know. But the reaction that I've seen so far doesn't seem to suggest that people are just going to be like, oh, that's it? Okay, we're fine. I don't know. But I'm very curious what the ratings will be for this weekend, whether people will tune this out, with people say, forget this, I'm not watching pro golf anymore. I don't know. That's going to be a long-term thing to figure out. But I will say that, and I think Kevin Van Valkenburg very well wrapped this up, and I had a different slant on it, but the idea that bringing more money and more power and more of that to a niche sport seems, one, really strange, because we are still a niche sport, especially at a professional level. But two, that it doesn't really do anything for fans. They go, oh, we're going to grow the game and all that. Money doesn't grow the game. I don't know how anyone has not figured this out. Money can make platforms possible. Money can make for better television times and things like that. It can make for better business opportunities. But if the product isn't any different or any better, then you don't get people to watch. And at the end of the day, fundamentally, professional golf will be the same as it was, whether LIV is around or not, as it has been for 50, 60, 100 years. It's going to be increasingly commercialized. It's going to be increasingly about the money for the players, and the fans get nothing extra out of it. So yes, they could make better formats. They could make a better television product. There could be incremental things here that could make this a better watch for people. But if it's just about the money and it's just about keeping people at bay or getting people involved or paying off people, then you, the golf fan, ultimately don't win anything here except basically having some more guys in the field that you had missed. I don't know if that's worth it to you or to me. No idea. But it feels like the bluster that's been described about this deal will eventually give way to the reality of it, and then you can assess it for what it really is. That's going to do it for us on Two Off the First. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. I appreciate it. We'll be back with more shows next week. We'll talk about the U.S. Open from Los Angeles Country Club. We'll do some betting shows around on video for you if you're interested in betting around the U.S. Open. And we'll have as best of the time we can about the national championship. And I know that's not going to be a huge story still, but it is an important story and we want to cover it, give it the due that it deserves for being the national championship. If you catch us as a podcast and you can do so on your platform, leave us a 5-star review or a comment, helps us reach more people. Watch on YouTube, consider subscribing to our channel, smash that like button, leave a comment, happy to get back to you. Catch us through some other fashion. Thanks for doing that. Thanks for spending some portion of your day with us. We will be back soon. Thanks so much for watching after what feels like the craziest week ever. And just remember, there's still a whole lot more to come. I'm Ryan Balogie. Thanks for checking us out. We'll see you next time on Two Off the First.